Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the Dr. Supercoach podcast. You're on once again with Chizo. In today's episode, it is the recap of round 8. And with me this afternoon to talk all things Supercoach is the man himself. Pistol, how are you going there, champion?
I feel refreshed after a week off the pod. I had to do some soul searching because I had a terrible, terrible week last week in the 2200s and dropped from like 1.5K all the way to nearly 4K, Chizo, which was not great. And then this week I put up a 2.5, 2.4 and jumped back to 1,360. So I've circled back around, but I'm feeling a lot better this week, that's for sure. How about you?
2463 for me brought me in from 6,700 to 3,850. So sort of halving my rank or almost halving my rank in the last three rounds. So I actually looked at it before, Pistol. Three rounds ago, I was ranked at 30K on the dot. And 3 weeks later, I'm into 3,850. So that upgrade cadence and just being aggressive with the trades has obviously really helped me to get where I am.
Yeah.
But I've obviously burnt through a lot of that cash generation and stuff like that. So it's going to be super interesting to see where it goes from here and how the buyers impact us. And we'll get into a few things in a moment. But once again, Dr. Supercoach podcast is powered by Code Sports. You can go check out our latest article over on the Code Sports website. We've got a little bit more housekeeping to get through. We've got three Cancer Council donations. Dennis D has Dennis's dogs into the eight. Thank you for your donation, Dennis. Ruben Brooks has dollar per point over slash unders for 6 projected score for the round. Full disclosure, I forgot I had switched the C onto Bont after 4 G&Ts, despite having the C armband on Sicily all week.
Lol. Wow.
So that's a amazing alcoholic infused
100 point game.
Decision.
That's
huge,
enormous.
Huge. Donate for dumb luck. We like those as well. And Delvin's just got Anguin as a
that's not
his donation.
Not too bad.
Maybe if you played him on field.
Yeah. I mean, he did cop a knock. I'm not sure if he's going to play this week because of it, but his ankle, I think it was, didn't look great. But hopefully he's okay because I think he plays all right. It's just you can't really predict the injuries, particularly rookie injuries. It doesn't leave you anywhere to go. They just end up all on your bench.
You just went New Zealander then? Or he's just been predicted. Oh, no, that was South Africa. No, I don't do accents, you know. Or maybe this Chizo character has been an Australian accent all along from somewhere else. We've it's got two Canadian. Patrons.
Yeah.
Well, it is, eh? Two patron sign-ups this week. Thanks for joining mid-season. You're just in time for the Dr. Supercoach Cup in a few weeks. That'll be getting underway. We've got more on that soon. Just Joshua and Just Josip, thank you so much for joining and jumping into Patreon.
Thank you.
I needed Slack straight away. So, Pistol, we've got the first, a couple little things we want to touch on before we get into some big Supercoach kind of think tank, topics. The one for me is I had a big panic stations because I had my three boosted trades lined up this week. Saw Marshall roll his ankle late in the game and I was like, no, everything's going downhill. But apparently... Ross the Boss said after the game that his ankle's fine. He could have come back on the field if they weren't already like doubling the opponent's score. So we're expecting him to be up for this week. So that's another one. The other only like major injury that I can think of was in terms of our super coach was Angwin, who I think he rolled his ankle as well. Was that?
Yeah, I think so.
I didn't catch it for the Giants game.
Yeah.
But he is also a test for this week, so that's indicating that it's not as serious as we hope. And the fact that they're listing as a test, hopefully, to me, means that they're considering, like, if he's right to go, to still be in the side, because we don't want another dead rookie on our teams. Pissed we've got enough of those already, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they're alive and well. They're just, you know, not in their AFL team.
I'm convinced that Constable's not alive and well.
Oh,
because,
no, don't say that.
Well, I've been supporting him for the last like 6 weeks, so maybe if I go negative psychology, we'll get him in our teams.
God, I mean, let's see how this one plays out.
he's going to be, what was that Gold Coast rookie that we had like 6 or 7 years ago that like smashed it out? It was like a Josh someone. Oh, I can't remember. And he was like averaging 100 over the first 2 weeks and then never played another AFL game in his career.
Yeah, it rings a bell.
You know who I'm talking about.
I know who you're talking about, but I can't remember the name.
Yeah, that was
a long time
ago. We usually start off with the rookies, Pistol, but we'll get to those a little bit later. I think the main point that I want to touch on this week is we're seeing a lot of people, particularly in SAC, get a little trigger happy with the midfield upgrade targets.
Great.
So I just want to go through some of these names because I'm one of the people that had been like waiting for Brayshaw to turn a corner and have a big game, and he's just had that. So you would think he would be high on my radar this week. But the next 3 weeks, he's got a fairly I think for him, he can still score, but they've got Sydney, they've got Geelong, and then they've got Melbourne before their byes. It just feels like a really tough 3 weeks to bring him in before he gets that rest. But is he one of those underpriced kind of premiums you're looking at, or do you have like some overall thoughts on the players that we should be looking at to upgrade in our midfield?
Yeah, well, there's a couple of good options. We're going to have to go through each one of them, I think, in a bit more detail because they're the main discussion, I think, point of this podcast. But Brayshaw himself had said that he had knee soreness. That was a fortnight ago, and it was the best he'd ever felt the week before last, and he obviously scored particularly well and then came out this week. Will Brodie dropped, Brayshaw as... I was going to say the leading man. Sarong was tagged by Nash, but Brayshaw was full of life and did really well. But I just want to point out, he is a flat track bully, right? Like, he had 7 games above 130 last year against the bad clubs, and not many good scores against the good clubs. So that's kind of why I like him when he has a great run that he can capitalize on, but I don't love it when he has a really hard run, which you've already pointed out. And I worry how he'll go over the next 3 weeks. And he's got that first bye as well. So that means that if he does do decently, I might have to pay $550K for him, but at least I'll feel a lot more comfortable picking up off his bye as well, a little bit more refreshed, hopefully, so he's not, got a sore knee. That might be the time to jump rather than now. But I say that all in one breath, Chizo, but I mean, you're looking at other options like Jack Steele, for example, and how would you compare those two?
Jack Steele, I've already talked about. Like, he still worries me considerably. Like, I'm going to be someone that if I'm getting Steele, I'm getting him after his bye just because I'm so concerned with that shoulder. He's obviously able to play through it, but we even saw on the weekend, I think at halftime, I want to say he was on around 30, maybe 35 or something like that.
Yeah,
may have been less than that. He had an epic second half to scrounge a 95, I think he scored. So he's one that definitely kind of I throw into this little bracket of kind of the 520 to 540 kind of bracket where we've got a bit of value there, some premiums that have dropped in price and we're kind of waiting to snavel up. But I'm just not really seeing the light at the end of the tunnel for their performance. Like there's every chance that you get Brayshaw and that 149 was his best score until he comes back after the bye with that tough run, as you've just said. And then Steele is the same thing. I'm just not sure that he's going to – like of those two, Steele is the one that's got the history of the 120 average. He's still getting 80% CBAs, but he's not able to put the points on the board like we have seen in the past. And it just leaves me a little concerned that we could have another couple of weeks of him averaging 90 and it's just sort of a failed upgrade.
I feel less concerned about his scoring potential than I still worry about his injury risk. I think even coming off the bye, that's not enough time for his shoulder to heal and withstand, you know, all of the rigors of AFL, right? Like if he cops a knock, he's still going to be in trouble. And I'd feel, I guess, a lot better with more data under the belt. And if he's not scoring over the top well, he's not going to really price me out either. So I can also look at him after the bye. So I agree with the destination cheese, or maybe just not the route in how we got there. But I think it's great sign seeing him get the 80% plus CBA. I'm less concerned about his score against North Melbourne because it was a weird game. It was like it was really uncontested, like lots of marks, not many stoppages where he would excel. When the game was on the line in the third quarter, he like rocketed and he was great. But I didn't get the feeling that he's going to drop. You know, I think was it 2 years ago, the back half after the bye, he went like 130 every game for the whole season.
Yeah, like it was like 131 or something to finish the year post bye.
I don't think that's going to happen. Like I'm not super worried about it, so I might just wait and reassess him after the bye. But happy to get him. Well, not happy. I think I'm overly cautious of his injury history, particularly for me because I am low on trades because I have copped so many injuries at the beginning part of the season. So I don't have the trades to deal with it. And as you had mentioned earlier, you were worried about Marshall wrecking your trade plans. But I don't have a boost. So if Marshall was out, I can't upgrade at all. I have to sideways him and downgrade somewhere else. So, you know, I'm a Jack Steele injury away from there being not just an injured, another trade down, but then I'm starting to like lose ground on people because they're upgrading and I can't. So the injury risk, I feel very threatened and worried and concerned by it at the moment. So if you're in a situation like me, I think that's something, a factor that you've got to consider when you're looking at your trades at this stage of the season.
Do you think that you're concerned about Steele's? Like, he's obviously playing AFL football. Do you think that we are a little bit, we're overly cautious on it? Like, we're putting too much emphasis on the fact that he's had a recent injury, but clearly he wouldn't be playing right now if it was hampering him to a massive extent.
I mean, we physically saw the bone detached from his body. I get that I'm seeing him play AFL, but I also saw the medical report and it wasn't attached. Like it was off. So I don't think like we're over exaggerating how bad his injury was because we were able to physically see it. Like it was bad. And he returned really quick. So I don't know if it's maybe we're being overly cautious, but I do think that's with good reason. I don't think it's not a justified caution, if that makes sense, Chizo. But I'm sure, look, even if he doesn't get injured and people are trading in, he plays every game for the rest of the season, he does his thing and averages 115, I probably wouldn't let it get to the stage where I don't trade him in, you know, after 5 weeks of him scoring 115 plus. I'd probably just bite the bullet and trade him in then. I'm not going to let it get to that stage, but I'm just two games back. I'm still in my scared stage, especially when there's other midfield options that we're I mean, we're in the midst of discussing that you could get instead.
Yeah, well, let's talk about another one that's basically the same price. You've got Callum Mills at $523K, $100. He's down $119,300 from his starting price. Obviously a different role than what he played last year. However, we saw on the weekend he got a return to the CBAs. James Rowbottom stunningly went down from the 70%, and I think it was our rain dance either this week or last week or the week before. He was down to 26%. Callum Mills was back up into the 60s. And also Goulden went to zero, but that's a completely side note. But Mills is one of those guys that we've kind of been saying as well, sort of along the lines with Brayshaw, that once he turns a corner and that role, in case of Mills, once that role it becomes what we wanted, he's got to be one that we look out for. He's had three games so far this year where he's gone above 40% CBAs, I believe. So he played round three, he had 69%. He went 103.
Nice.
And then, which is nice, then he went round seven and round eight. He was 47 and 63%. He's gone 80 and 100. I'm really, like, I feel like if we see another 2-3 weeks of that role continuing, that would lead me to be a little bit more confident that it's going to continue for the rest of the year. But unfortunately, it just seems to be like the games that he hasn't played in the midfield, or he's had less than 40%, was against Gold Coast, Hawthorn. He played 0% against Richmond, 10% against Geelong, 27% against Port, and the games that he's gone above were 69% against the D's, 47% against GWS in that really tight game, and 63% against Collingwood, again, when they're playing a really good team. Like, it sort of feels like if he has a run of weak competition, he's not going to be a CBA mid, and that's the thing that scares me off him. Because, you know, of these three guys, I think he's probably got the one with the best upside this year. He's got a low score of 87, so he's only averaging 97. So he's not had a terrible, terrible year. Sorry, he's got a low of 80 pistol. But I just feel like when he turns a corner, he's going to be the one that everyone wants.
Yeah.
But even with the 60% CBAs, I'm just not seeing it translate yet.
All great points, Chiezo. I think this game in particular against Collingwood is a really hard one to judge. And that's because it was a tactical masterpiece, I think. Maybe I'm being over the top exaggerating.
Hyperbole, I believe, is the word you're looking for.
I was on the tip of my tongue. Between Collingwood and Swans, I mean, for context, for people that haven't been paying attention to these two teams specifically, Collingwood has been playing a game where it's very fast-paced, out of the middle. You scramble it forward. You get it forward basically at all costs. You have high pressure, cause turnovers, you know, and that's the way of scoring. Swans came into the game and they were like, we're going to play a complete counter-attack, like opposite gameplay to Collingwood. We're going to play high possession football, high chip kicking and marking football. We're not even going to let it get to a contest so Collingwood can't scramble it forward. We're going to kick it around and just basically try and move the ball with foot skills through the midfield. And how we're going to do that essentially is by getting it into our best ball user's hands in Goulden, and we're going to get him to do half of the kicking. So what ended up happening was, like, on the Collingwood transition, like, we basically our far side winger would end up rolling back and Goulden would just kind of stay there, so he would not be playing on anybody for large portions of the game. So they kept using him, and that's why he racked up so many marks, so that they could use him to, like, tactically move the ball forward, avoiding contests so that Collingwood didn't get that upper hand and try and scramble it forward. So this game ended up with, like, ridiculous stats where Swans had 120 uncontested marks when from round, I think, 4, 5, 6, and 7, they averaged like 70. So they nearly doubled their uncontested marks. Their possessions were through the roof. They had like 420 instead of like 330. Obviously, when you mark the ball more, you're going to kick the ball more. So their stats of their players were all like crazy high. I mean, Mills had 31 touches and 9 marks, and you're like, wow, that sounds amazing. You must have had a big score, and you see 100 flat and you get disappointed.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, well, Parker had 34 touches. Goulden had 37 and 13 marks. Even Florent had 29 touches and 11 marks. Warner had 28. Like, they all had big numbers, so they ate up part of the Supercoach. Like they were eating each other's Supercoach pie, and that's why it's like not like Mills had a big game in comparison to his fellow Swannies.
Yeah, yeah, sure. He was just overwhelmed by the weight of numbers, and there was no like kind of room for scaling or anything like that.
Well, pretty much, and he just like he wasn't like you know the best midfielder for them. I don't think he was in the top two midfielders for them. He was the third best midfielder for them against Collingwood. And that's why he scored 100. Like he wasn't going to score 150. He wasn't going to score 130. Like he was just the third best. And I don't think that that's a game style that they can play against every club. So I think it's hard to say, oh, Mills got 31 touches and he got 9 marks, so he's back and I have to get him desperately. I think that was a game against Collingwood. Let's see how they go against Fremantle next week. I mean, probably not a great example because Fremantle will try and chip it around as well, so maybe Swans will try and do it. I'm not sure what will happen, but I don't think you need to go early on Mills because it is possible that he gets 40% CBAs next week and they throw Rowbottom back in to try and win more of the contests in the midfield this week, and it was just a Collingwood matchup type game. And with a break even that's still, you know, 119 or so, he's not really going to price you out. But I totally agree that if we see like 2 more weeks of Mills getting 60%+ CBAs, he can average 120 with 60% CBAs. So then he's the number one guy that I want to get if that's the case. I'm just still gun shy. If I'm picking a guy this week, then sure, I guess, and that's my price range, I probably go for him and risk it. But it's a punt. Like this is, you're paying a premium. You're buying a premium midfielder and you're punting, which doesn't sound super appealing at this stage of the season when there's, even though the cash gen's drying up, it's not like this is your M8 and you're like, oh, I'll roll the dice and just go for this guy who might break out. Like this is somebody that's hopefully going to be an anchor of your team moving forward. So, it's not my favorite pick of the rounds, let's put it that way.
Yeah, so we've talked about Brayshaw, Steele and Mills, and they've all got their downsides. As much as we wish that we could pick a 110, 115 midfielder for priced in like the low hundreds.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some guys that do get you exciting. We'll talk about the Essendon boys because I'm running the podcast and I want to talk about my boys, Parrish and Zerat. You've mentioned on a previous podcast that post-buy, I think they play, is it Hawthorn? No, they play Eagles and North twice, so 4 of their games post buy, are good scores for both of them. I've said this before. I can't really differentiate between Zerat and Parrish, so I would just pick the cheaper one. What are your thoughts on both of those? I'll throw them both to you in one go because they're it's hard to differentiate between them.
Super hard. I mean, I've always got a soft spot for Zach Merritt because he always ends up in my team after the buy, and he pretty much averages like 120 on the run home every year after the buy. So
yeah.
I definitely have a soft spot for him. It's hard to differentiate them because, one, they're both good, and two, they both score well, but they do it in different ways. Merritt is more of a, you know, he will tackle and take marks uncontested.
And accumulate.
Well.
And
but Parrish is just pure contested ball winner. I'm going to get 40 touches a game and I'm going to score 130. If there's scaling on the line and it's a tight game, maybe I'll be able to get a 160. But, you know, on the off chance, he has 21 touches. You know, I don't know why I just said Troy's 21, but he ends up with like an 80 score, whereas Zerat from 21 touches can still ton up because he just does so many of the other things. So I always like Merritt a little bit more, but there is a price difference which you have to factor in. It's minimal.
15K I think it is, or 14,000, something like that.
Yeah, and if that's enough that means a lot to you and you prefer to get Parrish, then obviously go for it. The cheaper one is probably the better one in this case. I think if I had to choose and I had the money for both and I was looking at shopping in that price range, I think I would lean Zerat, but it's hard to say that going into a Brisbane matchup where he might cop some attention this week, but I would love to have one of these Essendon boys for the run home because I think they're gonna do well. So if I'm shopping in that price range, I know it's 50K more, but I think it'll be for that certainty of having an anchor in your side, I feel a lot better paying that 50K.
Yeah, and I think that's the difference between the likes of Parrish and say someone like Steele or Brayshaw. I think these guys have like have had one decent 120 plus score that has stopped their price from going sub 500k, whereas Parrish has just sort of really gradually just trickled down from 600 to start the year, averaging 107 as opposed to his 110 plus that he had previously. So it's less that it's less that Parrish has like is clearly a better player. I just feel like his year has been more consistent and there's less question marks. And you're purchasing that for as little as 30K.
Sounds good when you say it like that.
Yeah, which I think is the main point for me. And like he's been reasonably decent. Like his last 5 weeks have been 98, 108, 110, 108, 117. Sorry. So he's not like absolutely blowing players out of the water and he's uber unique that you have to get your hands on. But for me, he's sitting at M5 before I do any upgrades. If I got a midfielder this week, they'd be like M6. So he's certainly, as you say, an anchor that is sitting in the middle of my team that I'm certainly pretty happy with.
Yeah.
I guess the question is that we're now kind of moving from that 520 to 540 bracket. We've moved up to the 570, 580. I guess the players that we feel a little bit more comfortable with that you might be looking at would be an Oliver and a Neil, which have come down in price, and even the breakout of Noah Anderson, three guys that you'd feel even safer getting.
Yeah, so it's good points, Jeez. I think Anderson is obviously dominating while Tuke Miller is unavailable with his injury. I say with a tear in my eye is my boost, my boost of him in and my boost of him out has wrecked me.
Keep going.
It's not too bad. but yeah, I don't mind it, Jeez. So I would feel that knowing that Tuke is going to come back into the side, I don't love buying Anderson above 600K when there's like an asterisk next to his name. Like he'll score really well for now, but I think if you want to buy him, it was probably last week. I don't love paying 600K for a guy that I might have to trade out later. Yeah,
it's the price. It's not genuinely the output. So
if we're looking
at these games with Tuke. Tuke didn't miss a game to start the year. No, he didn't. He went 93, 91, 71, 134, 109, 89. And then without Tuke, he's gone 144, 189 as their made midfielder. He's jumped from averaging around the 0.9 to 1.0 points per minute to 1.4 and 1.7, which are not sustainable long term.
No.
But he will score without Tuke there.
Yeah, and he's got a great buy, so I see the appeal as well.
Yeah,
In getting him, but I just think if you're paying that price as well, like if you don't have one of the big guns, you know, like an Oliver, like just get Oliver if you're already going up in that price range.
Yeah.
I mean, Oliver's got a break even of 99. I know he might get the Nash tag, but he was tagged last week and got 130. So
Oliver's not a tag risk in my opinion. Like
the
last 5 years. He's proven that his tags are a 105 instead of a successful tag is a 105 instead of 155.
Yeah, that's right. And as a non-owner of Oliver, I feel pretty lucky that we're going into eight games in and he has only had 150 score.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be cutting my losses and running right now. This is where, if you have the money, and we'll talk about upgrade cadence a little bit later, but I'd be looking at just solidifying, all right, well, he's averaged 126 and hasn't caused me too much damage, and now I'll lock him in and those players that have him will stop gaining some ground on me, and he's clearly one of the best vice captaincy options or captaincy options available, and we'll just take it from here before he, you know, potentially goes back up to 700K in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. I guess the question becomes, like, if you're shopping in the 605, I think he is, yeah. So 605 to kind of 620 range, you've got the Noah Andersons, Cripps in there, Josh Kelly even at 584 kind of falls within the Merritt and Parrish bracket that we just talked about. And then very, very soon after that, you've got Petrarca and Oliver at 650. Like, I think if you're not going in the 560 kind of Parrish Zeret range and you're looking for absolute breakout and you're going past 600, you really are looking at trying to get Oliver, aren't you?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And I think Petrarca is good as well. If you, I mean, not instead of Oliver, but in addition to Oliver, he's also good.
Yeah. What's your update on the DPP status for Petrarca? I feel like it's getting less and less likely.
Yeah, I think Maeve came out today. You can check it out at Code Sports, but the it's trending away from the 35% mark that he needed. So I'm not exactly sure if he's going to end up with it, although Gorn is looking better by the week. And Walsh is holding steady just across the threshold, but he's a week-by-week discussion point because in his current role, he's not looking like he's going to be, you know, an extremely 120 damaging sort of midfielder, and you're paying 615K for him at the moment. I'm not sure it's worth taking that risk of him.
He's still right scoring now. Well, but what you're talking about is the eye test. You're watching the game, seeing that he's spending a fair chunk of time across the forward line, like starting at half forward and stuff like that, and that's something that's jumping out at you.
Well, if he's starting at half forward and running into the contest, but he just misses those opportunities to get those, I guess I'd say cheap ball, but it's definitely not cheap ball, around the middle. You know, when Cripps wins the clearance and handballs out to Walsh, and Walsh gets the bomb at long, like, happens, you know, less often because he's not there. He can't just teleport into the middle. I mean, he tries, but he can't do everything. But I see his role that if he misses forward DPP and he keeps this role for the rest of the season, like, it's not a good role for Walsh. Like, he might be good enough and talented enough that he goes 110, but that's not great for paying above 600K.
Mate, I talking about paying around 600K for a midfielder, I've got Lachie Neale at 594. He played North in round 5 and had his customary 176 against a poor team.
Yeah.
I want you to have a guess at what his season average is if we take out that flat track beat up.
Oh, jeez. If I'm going to take a complete stab at it off the top of my head, probably like 100.
It's double digits.
Really?
It's not three figures. It's 96.7.
Wow, that's really low.
That's shocking, right?
So are you getting him?
Well, it's one of those ones that, like, again, we're kind of saying you're looking for security over the likes of Steele, Mills, and Brayshaw that have their issues, and you just think, oh, Lachie Neale's cheap. But has the addition of, you know, Dunkley and Ashcroft influenced his ability to consistently put out these 120 plus scores? You said these are his scores for the year. He's had 95, 100, 117, 102, 176, 76, 124, 63.
I mean, if I had to take a punt on anybody at my M8, and these are the types of play, like, I would rather take it on Neale, given his upside, than go for like a rando. But he does well at the Gabba. He's yet to sub-ton at the Gabba. Does play his next two games there. Does like playing Essendon as well. I don't know if he's going to lose as much money as we're hoping. He might just hold kind of steady at the, you know, 580, 590 mark. But it's an interesting one to discuss whether he's worth getting or not. But he's got the round 12 bye, so I think I might wait for it then.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess, you know, just as you're saying, like, I was sort of leading down the path of maybe we stick clear of Lachie Neale for a little bit until we get a bit more of a bearing on what his season's going to turn out like, because we can't sign up for 176, 76, 124, 63. That, like, you can't pay 600K for something. If I wanted, like, scoring that could fluctuate like that, I'd just pick Brayshaw. save myself 60K.
Yeah. No, it's a fair call. It's a fair call. Yeah, that is shockingly poor scores from Neale, but we'll see what happens in the next part of the year, Chiso.
Yeah. Now, the last thing I want to touch on in terms of mid...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Field upgrades, but this applies to the remainder of your team, wherever you are upgrading. Is it sort of about now, Pistol, and this sort of links into our rookie discussion, upgrade cadence and cash drying up, stuff like that. These upgrades right now matter for your buyers. I think it's extremely important when you're splitting hairs between players that you're also taking that in consideration. A lot of people last week, particularly in Team Chizo, were talking about Sicily versus Sinclair, and it literally came down to which guy fitted their buyers better is how they separated them, because they were finding positives and negatives for both of them. So I feel like that's one of the attractions for Anderson as well, as on top of his scoring. But
yeah.
I don't think you should pay a premium for a premium at just because they've got that buy. I think you should be able to navigate the remainder of the buys correctly, as long as you've structured your upgrades correctly. If you've loaded up on Walsh and Bont, and people are looking at Baz Smith this week, your round 15 is just going to be so cooked that it's like a well done steak.
Absolutely, it's definitely important to take into consideration. I chose Sinclair over Sicily purely on buys, which sounds good after week one, but Sinclair's role, you know, 60%+ CBAs,
yeah,
is not ideal at all. So
it's the role you literally don't sign up to get Sinclair for.
Yeah, that's right. I might, if that's going to continue, I might prefer Sicily for the rest of the season. I think he had, what, his worst game in like 3 years, Supercoach wise. So yeah, I guess that's one for another podcast, I think, Chizo.
Yeah. All right, mate. Well, the next section is going to be on the rookie quality coming up. We're all looking to kind of downgrade and start getting these boosts going and get that upgrade cadence that we always talk about. But Pistol, the rookie quality that we've sort of run into right at this very moment, I won't say it's dire, but it's not necessarily looking great, is it?
It's dire.
Okay, all right, you're going there. All right, have balls in your court, tear them apart.
No, look, I would love
that
to
wasn't,
sit
that
here.
That wasn't a question. You don't get to discuss this. Yeah, okay. This is the host, okay. Host chair decides.
I would love to say this is the rookie to get this week, and that would just be how I'd start this conversation. But all of them have huge asterisks, question marks, whatever you want to call it, of unknown quantities, and it makes life very difficult when trying to choose a downgrade target. But particularly, as you said, some of these guys might even last us all the way to the buys, and then I got to try and factor that in to our decisions as well. So I think it might be worthwhile just talking through some of the pros and cons, I guess, of all of the rookies, and then you listening right there, yes, you can decide on which one you want to bring in as what sounds best to you, because it's very much an even playing field. I think I know which way I would lean, but I'm not as confident as I would in other weeks. But Chizo, I think we might start from the top. We've got we've got Rory Atkins, just over 200K, defensive mid, Gold Coast, so goodbye. And he's put out two semi-decent scores. Have you managed to watch any of his games this year?
I've watched it, and then I haven't seen him in the AFL for so long that I forgot what he looked like. I don't think I've seen him in Gold Coast colours. Like, I genuinely just remember Rory Atkins as an Adelaide Crows player.
Well, essentially with Weller out, I know he was kind of got shifted to the wing, but just with the reshuffle of how it's worked out, Atkins has kind of played either halfback or defensive wing running there. So he's been able to get quite a few marks, and therefore quite a few kicks. I think he took 5 kickouts last week as well.
Yeah.
Which was a bit of a bonus. But eye test wise, I think he's been decent, like pretty good. He hasn't scored, like he scored 68 this week for Supercoach. And I think whilst his first half wasn't great, his second half I thought was very good. He did what you had to do in the AFL when the ball's coming in thick and fast from Melbourne. It's a tight game, and he gets his hands on the ball and he bombs it out, you know, 40 meters towards the boundary line, around the 50 meter arc, and you know, it's a turnover or whatever, but that's kind of the right AFL kick to do. Yeah. But it's bad for Supercoach, and he did that a couple of times, so he was, you know, his points growth was stunted by these turnovers and positioning kicks. But I think it was still like the right team thing to do in that. So yeah, it's hard to judge him. I know people were like, oh, he kicked it terribly, had this low disposal efficiency. I'm like, yeah, but context of the game is important. So I thought he looked quite decent. And the thing with him is that he's got West Coast this week, and he's got a break even of negative 42. So a 63 is going to make him almost 50K just off one price rise. So
yeah,
you're buying him at least for 1 week. You're hoping to get two. If you get three, that's like amazing. You're going to win the trade for sure. And anything more than that is like a massive, massive bonus. And Holman currently is in a moon boot because he's got turf toe, and they're hoping that he's going to play. And even if he comes in, it's probably at the expense of Tom Berry. It's not even expense for him. You got Ainsworth, who's struggling with injury at the moment and is not necessarily going to play this week. And I think potentially could displace somebody like Davies in the side, and they could do a bit of a restructure. And then you have Weller, who is probably the biggest threat to Atkins, but Weller just had more discomfort in the knee that he did his ACL in. So I think we don't have a timeline. I doubt he's not going to play this week if he's got discomfort in his knee, right? So it's one of those ones where that could linger. Like that might be 1 week, it might be 4 weeks. It's too hard to know. But if you're getting 3 weeks out of Atkins, you're making 100K. If you get 2 weeks out of him, you're making 75, 80K. So it's just, is that better than the other potential options? I'm not sure. Yeah. Maybe. It might be. And you have to pay up more, and it might impact your upgrade cadence. But that's the pros and the cons there.
He also led the match for meters gained as well with 637. Like, he was far and away the most aggressive forward mover of the ball.
It was bombing it long. You know, they were under pressure. So he was getting it forward. That just supports kind of what I saw. I think you've got some other options that are available. I think
The big one that everyone's talking about is Drury. Everyone wants to go a week early on Drury. And I thought it was fine, but it's not like he's an absolute desperate trade-in from what I saw.
Absolutely not.
That pause really scared me. I thought you were going to roast me then.
No, I was having difficulty swallowing. Basically, Drury, I went early on Wagner once upon a time earlier in the season in a desperate attempt to be able to,
and then got rocked to the core when he didn't get picked.
Who was I trying to avoid? Somebody. Anyway, it was for one of my upgrades to be able to afford him. So I had to go early, and he didn't make it past two games, and he still sits on my bench. I'll let that be a lesson to those that have gone early on a rookie. We saw Drury. I thought he was good up until halftime. Lots of good efforts, really solid. And then after halftime, I think he got touch the ball like four times or something. He just kind of didn't really get amongst it. He was far from the worst for North Melbourne. I think he'll get picked this week. I think in the preseason he was a little bit of Clarko's love child. They kept calling him in the preseason, so that should hold him in some good stead. But there's every chance he's terrible this week and then just gets dropped, and then that's it. So I feel uncomfortable going early, but I guess if it's the only way for you to upgrade and you don't have many other dead rookies on your bench, or you're getting rid of like a Cowan, for example, and you want to withdraw the 100K from an already dead rookie, I can see that if that extra money is worth it to you. But I just want to put an asterisk next to it that I don't recommend it this week, Chizo, that's for sure.
Yeah. Do you get any clarification on his role? He was named at halfback at the expense of Sheasel and Zeeble named in the forward line. Just a little bit of fun with the magnets. But he played sort of like a high half forward, right? It wasn't a small forward.
No, it wasn't a small forward. It was high up forward. Yeah, he was roaming around the 50-meter arc, kicking it. He had some kicks inside 50. I mean, that's not an easy job to try and kick it to the North Melbourne key forwards.
Yeah, yeah,
barely exist. But yeah, and potentially it didn't help that there were so many behinds as well. People kick straight, and maybe some goal assists, you know. But 51 is a decent score for a 102k player. Like if he's going to do that for a couple of weeks, you know, he gets to 200k. You made 100k. That's great. It's easy. It's easy to make. It's much, much easier to make 100k when you start at 102k. But
yeah,
geez, there's a couple of other options that I think
everyone that owns Liam Jones is really like they're nodding your head at that statement there, mate. The next one we've got the Weedle from Hawthorn down back. I guess everyone's sort of overlooking him for Drury.
Are they?
I'm assuming. Look, they really are. Like, particularly that I'm seeing in Slack is everyone's going a week early on Drury or at least trying, like, putting in Rate My Trades, doing that. And there's been very little mention of players looking to bring in Weedle this week.
Boy, I'm really going to blow some people's minds on the next couple of rookies to talk about. But, yeah, I thought Weddle played pretty well. I think the problem I have with any Hawthorn defender is that there are just so many Hawthorn defenders, Chizo. They have like a million on their list. So it's technically like a revolving door. I mean, CJ was like managed this week and I would expect CJ to come in and I don't know if they're going to drop Fergus Green to play Scrimshaw forward to fit CJ in. And then what happens? Like they also have, you know, Blunk and... DJB, I don't know, I'm putting on accents for some reason, name pronunciations, but they're in the VFL that could come in at any stage as well. There's just a lot going on down back for Hawthorn. So it's one of those rookies where they need to play well to keep their spot, but also him playing well doesn't mean, you know, 60 plus scores. Because of his, you know, positioning, playing more as a, I guess, it's weird. He played in the preseason on the wing and he played more of like a key defender kind of this week. But he scored 54 and he played well. I don't know if he's going to play much better than that. I think that's kind of what he can do. And I don't know if that's going to make... That might get him to 200K. He might make 70K. It doesn't sound massively appealing, but at least he's going to be named this week. Well, he should be named because he played quite well. So yeah, if you fancy... picking somebody who needs to play well to keep their spot, technically could remain in for the entire rest of the season, also might be dropped after next week, then Weddle's your guy.
Yeah, and then, hey, maybe you've made 20K off him.
It's possible. I mean, it's better than Wagner.
That's true. The next one that's sort of going underneath the radar from the Cats, he's played three games, but he's had a couple of as a sub, and that's Nevitt. He obviously scored... What did he score, 60 or 70 or something on the weekend?
Yeah, 72.
He's now presenting himself as a potential trade-in option that people probably haven't paid as much attention to now that he's getting like a full game. And Danger's now confirmed out for 3 weeks or 2 to 3 weeks as well.
Yeah, never underestimate him. He has
pretty... Did you say never to underestimate him?
Yeah, I did. He... has, thanks for the response, I appreciate it.
That's how you write back in all your emails, it's so funny.
Yeah, he has, I guess, the job security issues that some others might have, but there's also injuries at the Cats. You know, Stengel's out for a couple of weeks still. Dangerfield, as you just said, is out for 2 to 3 weeks. I think Rowan has got some soreness and issues with his injury. So Guthrie's still injured. I mean, their injury list is starting to stack up. I think Close has got suspended.
Yeah, he has.
For a week. So Nevitt's playing next week, and he has a break even of minus 25. I mean, I'm not expecting him to score 72s, but that's better ceiling than, you know, half of the other rookies. But, you know, you need to pay 164K for him. It's more, this is one of those picks where, it's kind of like Chandler at the beginning of the season where technically if everyone comes back, he'd be dropped, but everyone just kind of got injured and then the people that were injured stayed injured or copped another injury and eventually just they worked their way into the side because they had enough time, enough good form that they ended up could stay in the side. And Nevitt will get at least 1 week to try and hold his spot. But in a similar vein to Weddle, I guess, is he could work his way in and people might remain injured for longer periods of time and he just stays in the side, or he's really bad next week and he goes up for close. So you got to kind of pick your poison between all these players, and he is a little bit more expensive than Weddle. He has a better buy if he manages to play through them, but I'm not sure we can count on that. Otherwise, that's been a massive victory. But he definitely is somebody that should be considered that hasn't really been considered, I think, unfairly just because of his starting price when everyone's bad, so everyone should be talked about.
Oh, he's completely gone under the radar as well. Like, he's just not a name that you're looking out for on the rookie list, particularly coming off two sub games. Like, there's no reason to have paid any attention to him. Like, if he'd scored 40 from his game last week, I doubt we'd be saying anything about him.
Yeah, yeah. Never had I ever heard of him before.
Okay. The thing with Nevitt for me is that, like, he's probably going to make similar cash to Weddle, but you're spending an extra 35K. Like, that's the difference that you've got to weigh up. I think they're almost entirely the same. And these guys, like the Drury, like Atkins is probably the only one we've mentioned that has any say, like any reason to be played on field. Like, if you have to, depending on what your trades have been, like he's gone around the 70 mark to in his first two games, and he's taking kick-ins as well. He took five
and against West Coast this week.
Against West Coast this week, like, there's every reason that he could be an on-field option, but Drury's not, Weedle's not, Nevitt's, I don't really think he is. And then the next player that we're throwing, like, into the ring is Chessa. He's come back from injury, like, he's been on the fringe. A lot of us still have him on our bench because we didn't want to touch him. Some of us might be looking to move him in. He's got that DPP. I'm hoping you can make a case for him.
I feel like Chess is just the guy at the party that's like, he came in at the beginning of the party, he went out to go get the pizzas, and then he's come back and just like, everything's on fire.
That's that community episode.
Yeah, that's exactly what Chess has done. He's like, back now, the rookie, like, there's just a mountain of injuries.
This is the darkest timeline.
He's pretty much just like, what have I walked into? And he's just going to be played for the pure reason that West Coast don't have enough players on their list to be able to play. And given he was such a highly touted junior, it would be a travesty when they only have like one available player that's not, I think, listed on their emergencies every week for him to be that player. That just seems absurd, right? And I know his scoring potential is poor. And when I say poor, I mean he didn't make
terrible.
He didn't make us any money earlier in the season.
He made 8.2K.
Yeah, he made us 8.2K with a 20, a 27, and a 42. But the thing is, if he's going to get game time, all it takes either is one good game over 60s or back-to-back like 50s, and he might make it up to 200K and he might make you 70K, and at least his job security seems better than the other guys. He's got DPP if not, which is always particularly handy. And I think, I mean, look, if he's playing through the buyers and he scores 20, he's not really going to be in your best 18. But if you're facing a donut, that's 20 more points than you were going to have before the trusted trade-in.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He was in 40% of teams in round three. I can't figure out. He's in 26% of teams now. So there's still quite a few people that are holding him. So he might be a last-minute addition to come and save us during the buys. But
if he's named Chizo, I think I like him the best. But that's I don't think it's potentially a hot take because they're all – anyone could be good or bad, I guess.
I guess the other thing to mention is there's a whole bunch of two-game players that could come back. Obviously, Charlie Constable, but then there's Corey Wagner, who's been playing fine in the reserves but not amazing.
Thanks for that.
Trying to fill you with confidence. Obviously, Ned Long, who else we got? Oh, you could also look at Arthur Jones' pistol. He's played pretty much every game this year and has made 40K.
I mean, he's got job security as well. It's worth. Yep. He's got the round 15 buy though, so it's not really
extra rounds to make another 40K. Ollie Lord for Port is also another one. So there's a couple players that could end up getting named that are sort of basement price that you got to keep an eye on, but really starting to scrape the bottom of the barrel. And that sort of moves us into quite naturally into the upgrade cadence pistol, is that we've been harping on that the last few weeks while we've had options. But now the options are drying up. What's your perception on what we should do with the upgrade cadence? I think I was talking to you before about the trades that I plan to do this week, and I said, oh, I'd have 70 or 80K in the bank. And you're like, to do what with? Like, you're not going to be upgrading and downgrading for like another 2 or 3 weeks as we wait for the Chincotters and the Simpsons to make money. So you might as well get the best premium you can. And I was like, you know, that makes a lot of sense. But is that sort of our way of saying that, hey, this upgrade cadence is going to stop at the station and wait to pick up new passages by round 11?
Yeah. So really it's up to your individual team. I can't really tell each person like when to start and stop upgrading. But if you're looking at your bench and you have a plan, and this is the like almost the most important time to plan for the whole season, you're like, hey, if I make an upgrade now and I get a Zeret over an Oliver, or Parrish, let's say, over an Oliver. I don't know why that didn't make any difference to my hypothetical. Made zero difference. Let's say I'm getting Parrish over Oliver, and that extra 100K lets me do an upgrade next week, and I can grab Sicily for cheap. And, you know, now I've got two premiums and it's kept my upgrade cadence. Then that makes sense for me to get the Parrish in this first week. But if I'm looking at my team and I say, hey, I have almost no cash generation, which I am looking at my team, and I can get Parrish and 100K in my bank, but I literally can't trade anybody in my team, like the 100K doesn't get me anywhere, then I'm not upgrading next week. And I'm going to have to upgrade the week after. So I may as well get the better player now so I get points on the field for the next 2 weeks of better points. And then hopefully, as usually it does in Supercoaches, you get in the fortnight or whatever when you've got your two players are topping out at the same stage, and then you can do the one up, one down, and you can figure it out that way. I mean, I feel like a lot of people that have Liam Stocker, who just got 103 and kind of reset his break even, you're not going to trade him this week, because it's got a low break even. So you need to factor that in. You're probably not going to trade him next week either, because that 103 is in his rolling average. You're probably only trading Stocker in 2 weeks' time. And that might align well with somebody like, I don't know, Chandler or Hopper. And so it's just really important to plan your trades. I think Ashcroft is somebody that we could consider a kind of a hoverer Chiso. He's got a really good run, and I know that 115 will come out of his...
Sorry, did you say Tom Hawkins? Really good run coming up.
No, I definitely did not. Will Ashcroft, who's at that 115 score, is going to come out of his rolling average, and he will potentially drop a little bit of cash, but he's also a decent on-field scorer, and you can hold him for a couple of weeks. And then you end up being able to time it well with another guy in your side that is also peaking in price, and then you can kind of like get rid of both of them at the same time. Or if you want to just trade him now, you can also just trade him now. You know, both options are good options. It's just really important to look at the timing of your rookies and when you can cull them. I think like JVR is missing 2 weeks, so he's not going to drop in price. So you can really pick and choose. And honestly, you might look at these sets of rookies and think, you know what? None of these rookies are good. I don't want any of these guys, so I'm not going to trade this week. And I'm going to get jewelry next week. And the difference, I guess, it's slightly worse to do that than this week, because the other people get an extra week of a premium score on you. But then next week you're back to square and you might have saved yourself a trade because they've gambled on rookies that get dropped after 1 week, and you've got a rookie with better job security. It's just worthwhile planning out your next couple of weeks of trades to make sure to see when your or if your upgrade cadence is going to stop and plan around it. I think a lot of us are in that situation where we don't have 3 weeks worth of upgrades in a row left. So yeah. If you're upgrading in only two of the three or one of the three, you might want to plan if it's now this week when you're doing your upgrade, or if it's next week or the week after.
Yeah, no, I agree. Like, as you mentioned, like planning ahead, like I've planned until like what my trades might look like until the buys. And just like you say, like if Hopper has another good week this week, put it this way, so I'm going to make it really simple. If you've got 100K left over and you want to do an upgrade next week and you've already got Drury, like you've got really no one to sort of go down to. Like Tom Berry and Harry Sharp are the other first game players for the year, and neither of them are really viable options, I don't think, in job security or scoring potential.
Yeah.
So obviously next week it's just probably going to be a singular upgrade if you've gone early on Drury. And if you've only got 100K, the only person you're trading out to a premium is probably Hopper, right?
Yeah.
So, and then if Hopper has another good game, you're not going to trade him. So why did you have that 100K in the bank? You might as well use it, and instead of getting steel this week, you can get whoever's
like Oliver
100K more than that. Oliver or Petrarca, I think, would be a 100K above steel or thereabouts. So that
assuming
was the way
it's a good use of 100K, you're not just blowing it on somebody for the sake of blowing it away, like. You have to have faith in that.
Absolutely.
Like if you love Steele, get Steele for sure. Not trying to talk you off Steele. But if you don't love him, don't be forced into picking him if you have to.
Correct. Play. Correct. And I guess the other option is if the difference is 200K instead of 100K, then Chandler becomes next week becomes a 575K cash in the bank, like once you go to trade him. So I think it does come down to if you genuinely have a plan to use the cash next week. Whereas if I think I had 70K pistol and then Chandler looks like the one that's getting close to the top. Let's say he becomes a trade-out option. He does another 30 or 40 next week. With 70K, I've got 450K. Who am I getting with that amount of money? I'm not getting anyone. And then I'm sitting on my hands waiting for Hopper to become a tradable option, which potentially you end up holding him for the buys as cover, depending on how that goes. So the way that I'm thinking about it is that rather than having that 70K in the bank and taking a chance with someone like a Brayshaw who might just revert back to his 100 average, or Steele who might get injured, or Mills who could be thrown around again, I think I would feel a little bit more comfortable just using that cash and, you know, maybe getting someone like a Zeret or even a Luke Ryan who's sort of under-owned for how well he's played this year. I think that would be a better use of my cash. And it's all about that we've talked about, particularly in the preseason, when it terms of our players, and that's the opportunity cost. What are you losing out on by not using that 70K or 100K to buy points into your team?
Yeah, and I guess like in your example, Chizo, it's you don't particularly feel strongly about Brayshaw or Steele or Mills.
No.
So now you get somebody who you actually genuinely want to get and feel more comfortable with as well. So
yeah.
You get the sleep at night factor a little bit too.
Yeah, exactly. That's probably leading on to the next point, is that are we basically saying that in the next 2 weeks, as the upgrade cadence is, like we talked about what we might do next week, but pretty much after that point, we don't really have any rookies that are going to be worth trading out. Like even Mitchell will probably still have a little bit more cash to make. And then, you know, one round after that, it's round 12, where we usually don't really trade before the buys anyway, and that's a pretty dull week. So are we almost committing this week in spending the cash, and that's sort of last upgrade before the buys, but is that almost like putting a hand up and saying, okay, like we've got to just pause until the buys get here before we can continue upgrading and wait for that cash to get there?
Well, it's very team specific.
Yeah,
I think it's too hard to answer. Like I'm not in a good way with my cash gen.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to blow through my boosts with the Darcy Cameron in, the Darcy Cameron out, the boost for Doherty out, and then the boost for Tuki in, the boost for Tuki out. I blew through five of my...
Wait, so you haven't used a single one for upgrading? Oh, I mean like you did, but then they had to get out.
The two times that I did that were for Darcy Cameron to get an extra premium and Tuke Miller... Both times they got injured immediately.
Man.
So I didn't get to use a single boost to upgrade my side faster. It was just ended up being to trade back out the
that
player
sucks.
I brought in. Yeah.
And obviously and getting rid of Doherty as well. So you've literally all five boosts have just been sidewaysing stuff.
And because of that, I've missed out on some rookies as well. Yeah. So it's been... my bench is deplorable. I am holding on by the skin of my teeth because my starting team was quite decent. So I think I've got this week of being, you know, kind of with or ahead of the top of the, I guess, the top teams. And then the next couple of weeks I can't upgrade, so they'll be gaining ground on me. And then I'll just be holding on for dear life until the end of the season. But if you've got people like Wilmot, McKenna, and these types of players still making you money on the bench, you might definitely find yourself where you're able to make an upgrade this week and an upgrade next week, and you're cruising. Because who knows what rookies will be available in a fortnight's time or even in 3 weeks' time. So each to their own this week. This is a big week for trading.
Yeah, yeah.
Can set up your whole season.
I absolutely agree. I think there'll be people that do nothing and there'll be people that boost. Legitimately, there's going to be both ends of the spectrums and everything in between will be happening this week. And I think it's going to be – we might see some players who are at the pointy end that are really trying to get towards the top as quickly as possible and be aggressive, make some moves to keep that kind of upgrade cadence going that they necessarily don't need to. Because as you said before, you don't need to get rid of McKenna's and Ashcroft's and these kind of guys. And they're going to be beneficial when it comes through the buys because they are best 22. But then the trade-off is, you know, are you missing out on weeks without a premium? So I think we've really covered that from every angle, and I hope that was really enjoyable. Pistol, any last thoughts from your personal side coming into this team, into this round nine?
No, I think just a shout-out that there's two games on Friday night. So if you weren't aware, that might impact your loopholing. So yeah, take note because I do want to see a donation for the Cancer Council, but I if it's there, I don't want it to read that I didn't realize that there was two Friday night games and I either messed up my captaincy loophole or messed up my rookie loophole.
Yeah, cool. All right, mate, thank you for sitting down with me. I don't like it when we podcast standing up. It hurts my legs. I appreciate you with all the chat that we have had this week. Community, thank you for listening. I hope that everything's kind of looking up and we're starting to power through. The Slack template is starting to break through and seeing some rank rises in the last few weeks. Good luck this week. We'll catch you all in the next episode of the Dr. Supercoach podcast.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.